It's Saturday morning at 11 o'clock, so it's time for My Side of the Universe on KOAL 103.9 FM and 750 AM. When I first got the opportunity to host this show, there were certain people I really wanted to talk to, and today's guest is one of them. There's topics that I wanted to talk about, absolutely, but there was just a few people that I really wanted to talk to, and this guy was definitely in my top five, and so we're really excited and really lucky to have him today. This is Jim Vieira that's going to be joining us. He's had two TV shows. One was The Search for the Lost Giants. The other was Roanoke, The Lost Colony. Very interesting shows. I really enjoyed them and looked forward to meeting with Jim and talking to him. And I think you're going to really enjoy what we do today. We're going to be talking about giants in the West, giants around the world. We're going to talk about monolithic structures. This guy knows a lot about a lot of different things. You're going to be shocked and really enjoy what's going on today. So in just a few minutes, we'll be back for Jim Vieira on My Side of the Universe on KOAL 103.9 FM and 750 AM.
Crab fishing, one of the deadliest jobs in the country. Fishermen go toe-to-toe with Mother Nature using 700-pound steel traps that are dropped 400 feet below the ocean surface to capture this delicacy. But we live in the desert, and there's no crab anywhere.
Until now. It's the brand new Crab Oscar Pizza at Big Don's in Price. This creation is a white sauce-based pizza topped with bacon, onions, asparagus, and crab. Get yours today at Big Don's, located at 170 West 100 North in Price. Call 637-DONS for takeout or delivery.
All right, today on My Side of the Universe, we have Jim Vieira, star of History Channel TV shows Search for the Lost Giants and Roanoke, Search for the Lost Colony. Welcome to the show, Jim.
Thanks a lot, Todd. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's exciting to have you here. I've been a fan of giants for years, baseball giants for sure, but also, you know, the regular giants, the monsters, the ogres, those kind of giants. And I was really surprised watching your show, just how evidence has disappeared, and you hear a lot of stories, you read a lot of old articles about the giants, but there's very little that we can actually find. And today, what we're hoping for is to learn a little bit more about the giants, particularly in the West, and where we might find some evidence.
Yeah, that's it's a real difficult and frustrating but interesting topic. We have, you know, myself and other researchers probably put together over 1,000 accounts from all manner of historical and scientific document, you know, town histories, you know, mining journals, railroad journals, anthropological and archaeological bulletins, Smithsonian ethnology reports, and, you know, New York Times articles. You really find that over the last 200 years, there's been quite a few outrageously tall skeletons being identified. There are moral and ethical implications, though. You cannot, you know, legally, because of Native American grave protection laws, obviously you can't dig. We're left in a position of trying to evaluate what has been unearthed in the past and identify as best as we can through photographs and journals and documented measurements. But there's a lot of controversy, and it's a very complex and difficult story to unwind, but I'll do my best. You know, I really see this as academic filtering, where, you know, the Smithsonian Institution's own ethnology reports list over 17 skeletons that the scientists unearthed, over 7 foot and taller, plus 36-inch skull from Illinois, and other, you know, really out of ordinary dimensions. But the reality is, a lot of these finds took place at a time when science was wrestling control away from religion, and the idea of giants was considered a religious one, quite frankly, one that was in the Bible and other religious documents, and that, you know, is based. It was basically portrayed religiously as a strange superstition, much like Native American oral history, where you have tribes all across the country talking about giants, is portrayed as, you know, some mythological fantasy as well. And, you know, just to give a background on what we're talking about here and what we've been researching is, you know, just a complex story that I think any logical and reasonable person will look at and say it's worthy of further investigation. That's our take. And, you know, I don't know if you've uncovered much evidence out west, but in the Four Corners area in particular are many, not just stories of giant skeletons, many, many bizarre native legends and accounts of underground caverns with, you know, basically the footprints of an advanced technological race that lived there. We cover it in the Curse of the Giant Hunter chapter in my new book, along with Hugh Newman, Giants on Record, where we go over hundreds of these accounts and try to get, you know, gather as much information as possible.
So this was a race that was not only giant, but technologically advanced. What are the theories there? Is it from, you know, I don't want to go UFO, but, you know, is it thought that, or is it just a civilization that was advanced and is no longer around? What do you think is going on?
Well, I would think there's two stories that I believe are going on. One is that Native Americans certainly had a royal class that was particularly tall, enormously tall sometimes, well over 7 foot. The males, the females over 6 foot. The Adena people, the mound builders in the eastern part of the country that built massive earthen pyramids in geometric forms. The Adena, Hopewell, and Mississippian cultures, roughly from 1000 BC to 1500 AD. And in the burial mounds and in the Smithsonian ethnology reports, you find accounts of 7 foot and tall skeletons. And the thought is that Native American shamans and royal peoples had a bloodline from the tall ones, if you will, that went back probably before the last ice age. Native Americans, they talk about particularly tall beings showing up, you know, after an ancient cataclysm like 12,000 years ago that blended with native tribes and became their royal class, if you will. And then they also tell a story of kind of a malevolent ancient enemy that was portrayed as cannibalistic sometimes. We've all heard of the Lovelock cave story and the Paiute Indians telling the same thing, same tale. So it's kind of two odd stories going on at the same time. And a lot of mystics like Edgar Cayce and Rudolf Steiner talk about basically an ancient cataclysm and the survivors showing up in the United States about 12,000 years ago. And a lot of Native people tell that same story. Viracocha and Kontiki and Quetzalcoatl, the same thing, the kind of tall, bearded, you know, great bringers of civilization are noted all around South and Central America. And in fact, we now have a 12,000-year-old megalithic temple site in Turkey called Göbekli Tepe that's pushing the dates extremely far back.
Yes, fantastic. I really didn't realize that those things were associated with giants. At all the times that I've, you know, studied the different monoliths and that, you know, you hear giants, but I always figured it was some kind of technology. And now it's a whole different civilization that we're looking at that was giants. Is that what I'm understanding?
Well, what the mystics would say and have said, like Edgar Cayce, for instance. Edgar Cayce was he was called a sleeping prophet. He was a Christian in his daily life, a real devout Christian, but he would go into this trance state, and basically he did 14,000 readings over 25 million words about health readings for people. But then he started to talk about Atlantis and other people's lifetimes in different places like Egypt and Alexandria. It was very, very interesting. He talked about what I found interesting in examining all this. I'm a stonemason who started to find these accounts in historical documents while looking at a tangential matter about stonework, actually, because I'm a stonemason by trade. And I will say that Rudolf Steiner, Edgar Cayce, Madame Blavatsky, and the Theosophists, the Rosicrucians, and the Freemasons all talk about giants as a historical reality, and that they say that they were part of the population of Atlantis. And I know it sounds out there, but they're all independently saying the same thing. And what it said is that giants and little people both made up part of the population. I'm not saying that, you know, what I see around the world is kind of this, these remnants of what we're talking about, not a race of giants. I may be wrong, you know, there's biblical scholars who might say otherwise, but I'm seeing, like, you know, remnants or a bloodline of giant people that continue on. And the odd thing is that there was a Native American conference years ago that was put together by Vine Deloria Jr., who's a Lakota elder, and worked with our friend Ross Hamilton in Ohio. And he said that the little people were a cause of oral tradition, or a remnant of these oral traditions all around the country, that the elders talked about the little people more than giants existing as a reality, which is very odd. But then all around the globe, the same myths and legends of little people, and even Lewis and Clark, the tribes he encountered, told him on Spirit Mound in South Dakota, that it was inhabited by, like, these malevolent little people. And the same stories as giants, you have benevolent and malevolent oral traditions. And then in 2003, in the island of Florentis in Indonesia, science has uncovered the bones of the hobbits that existed from 120,000 to about 12,000 years ago. And these hobbit people are their own branch of hominin, it looks like, and they're 3.5 feet tall. And, you know, it's this astounding find that basically matches the oral tradition of the Indonesian people who talked about the Ibu Gogo. So basically you have a race of hobbits, of little people, that was wiped out 12,000 years ago when this cataclysm that all the legends talk about hit, and also were the giant people that existed, like the natives would tell us, beyond 12,000 years ago, that hunted the mastodon and the mammoth like the Native Americans hunted the bison. So you have this similar story all around the planet, which is, you know, quite fascinating.
Absolutely. And in one of our earlier shows, we had a member of the Western Shoshone Nation on talking about the very thing, that there was giants in their history as well as the little people. So, yeah, it's out here as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, and you have Utah, Colorado, Arizona, so many strange stories. There's one story about it appeared in 1909. It's kind of a well-known tale at this point, that it's called the Egyptian Lost City in the Grand Canyon. And, you know, there hasn't been any tangible evidence to back the story up, other than a lot of conjecture. But the late Philip Coppens, well, I'll just get into it if I'm not familiar, an explorer supposedly named G.E. Kincaid, who was working at the behest of the Smithsonian for Professor Kincaid, Professor Jordan, I'm sorry, G.E. Kincaid from Lewiston, Idaho. He supposedly was one of the first white men to travel down the Colorado River, and he claimed to have encountered this unbelievable cave that he climbed up on 1,500 feet, filled with amazing artifacts and large mummies, and basically he called them Hindu-like or Egyptian-like, and it was dismissed as like a hoax in the 1909 May 15th issue of the Phoenix Gazette. But what Coppens found was, months earlier, there was another newspaper article talking about the expedition that was to come, led by Kincaid, and it was kind of interesting that there was corroboration of another sort, another article. So it doesn't seem like it was a fraud. It was really, there's so many stories like that. We include many in our new book, once again, Giants on Record, about just credible people talking about really strange underground places. And I understand it's frustrating because you want tangible proof, but these things take time. Whatever fits, you know, the academic theory of the time is accepted as true, regardless of its, you know, potentially, like, controversial nature. But on the other hand, if it is something that goes against the common theory, it's viewed immediately as a hoax or, you know, some unidentifiable thing. You know, it's this really strange academic filter that takes place, and it's particularly frustrating. I'll say this: all around the planet, these people who had these oral traditions passed down by storytellers who were well-trained, that one word you couldn't be out of joint, all around the world, they're telling the same story, cultures that had no contact with each other, supposedly, and they're talking about giants and little people and ancient cataclysm and advanced civilization, a cometary impact 12,000 years ago. They're all telling the same story. You know, doesn't it seem odd that they would be doing that if they didn't communicate with each other? It's just like, it is the most astounding thing. And it's not, you know, like some tall tales. This is world traditions, the most important, you know, considerations of these people passed down to their ancestors. You know, they wouldn't want to screw them over with erroneous information. They want a correct and accurate portrayal. And native oral traditions correctly portray the geologic record over 10,000 years ago. The Pacific Coast tribes understood tsunami frequency going back 3,500 years, on and on and on. This is sophisticated and intelligently passed down oral traditions, and we essentially burned the Library of Alexandria again when we disallowed Native American oral tradition to be used to draw scientific conclusions.
Very good. Well, we need to take a break. Hopefully you can stick around and come back after the break.
Sure.
Okay. Yep. So we'll be right back with Jim Vieira on My Side of the Universe on KOAL, 103.9 FM and 750 AM.
When only the best will do, Price Auto Group.
When was the last time you stopped at Auto Farms Price Auto Group? Now is the best time to check out our Orange Tag sales event. With every vehicle on both of our lots clearly marked with orange tags with discounted prices. Hi, I'm Justin Kennedy, sales manager at Auto Farm, and we have the best selection of new and pre-owned vehicles, financing to get you the very best deal anywhere with extra savings during our Orange Tag sales event. So get on down to Auto Farm today and start your new year off right.
Welcome back to My Side of the Universe on KOAL, 103.9 FM and 750 AM. We're here with Jim Vieira on My Side of the Universe on KOAL. So is this your main focus, Jim, or is the quest for giants mainly what you're after, or do you have other things going right now?
Well, I'm a stonemason by trade, and I've studied megalithic sites all around the planet. I look at sites and question what has been dated accurately and what hasn't. And once again, we know that we have a 12,000-year-old temple site in Turkey called Göbekli Tepe, and a sister site 20 miles away that hasn't been excavated yet called Karahan Tepe that's just as ancient. And the odd thing about this site is that the oldest enclosures are the most sophisticated. That means that the hunter-gatherers who supposedly organized and built this massive megalithic complex that was later buried after 1,000 years, somehow, you know, at the early stages of their building, they created the most outrageous and sophisticated enclosures, and then the work got worse and worse over the next 1,000 years, and then they buried the whole thing. That doesn't make any sense. That's backwards.
Exactly.
That's what we know about the evolution of society. So did they actually invent agriculture and megalithic building, which both things have to be true, or are true, I should say, or did they inherit a legacy from survivors of a pre-Ice Age advanced civilization, which, you know, Graham Hancock and other investigators point out. Now, you have the same story you're finding all over the world, where the civilizers or these sages showed up after the last flood and restarted civilization. So there are a lot of sites that I question, like the walls of Sacsayhuaman in Peru, Tiwanaku in Bolivia, Pumapunku. These sites, I believe they could be much older. The Sphinx, Robert Schock and John Anthony West dated much earlier because of erosion of water. So you're looking at 8,000, 10,000 years ago, most likely, for the Sphinx. And there's all these sites come in question. We're roaming the planet, and these things are hidden in plain sight, I believe. And we know Stonehenge was built in 2500 or 3000 BC, but there are other sites that some real questions are raised as to how old they are. So that is, you know, basically I'm a stonemason by trade. I run a stonemason's business, but I write and I investigate, you know, these strange things that come out of oral history. My hypothesis is, you know, an ancient flood, an ancient cataclysm, a pre-Ice Age advanced civilization where that was marginally populated by little people and giants, an accurate hypothesis or not. You know, that's basically what I'm chasing.
Very good. Now, as a stonemason, and I'm getting a little bit off topic here, but I would love to hear your take on Pumapunku and the other places like that that have the rock walls that are so incredibly built that it almost looks like they were melted in place. What do you think about the theories on that, and what do you think took place? How did they make those?
Yes, a very good question. Well, you have sites like Baalbek in Lebanon where there are, you know, 900-ton stones or almost 2 million-pound stones 40 foot in the air at the site, and there's others in the quarry that are 1,300, 1,600 tons. But the Romans did move, you know, one mistake that's made is like that's impossible for for ancient people to move these stones. But the Romans moved 200 and 300 ton stones, so it wasn't impossible. There's no evidence that they moved 1,000 ton stones like the wall of Baalbek. That looks like an older construction. And then you move over to, you know, Peru and other countries, and you look at sites like you're talking about, and it's not just the movement of the stones, which is outrageous, like the walls of Sacsayhuaman. It's the way they cut and fit the polygonal construction and the distinct appearance of machining with Pumapunku and other sites. Now, you need mathematics to do that. You need planning. You need written language and appropriate tools, like a freaking CNC machine. And I just cannot get around that. I've never heard a really good argument that goes, you know, you could hammer with copper chisels all day long or for 100 centuries, and you're just not going to get those defined equidistant cuts. And it's really, it should not be left in the hands of an archaeologist to answer these questions. It should be engineers and stonemasons and stone cutters and people who work in stone. It's just like there is no way, you know, that kind of thing is being done. It's, in fact, probably easier to move a 300 or 400-ton stone than it is to cut in such a precise way. Just think of it, how hard some of these stones are. But one of the problems is ancient aliens took off on these themes, and the show is successful because they cover a lot of cool information that you've never heard of. But at the same time, they tie this premise of aliens having to do with all this stuff, and that's kind of, you know, it's like that's the producer saying, "Hey, we got an order for 10 episodes. Let's, you know, let's figure out what we can tie aliens to, you know, aliens and ghosts or aliens and ancient structures or whatever." And I don't think it's a genuine search for the truth. What solves the problem or answers the question a lot better is an advanced pre-Ice Age civilization that has sophisticated technology to cut stone. And once again, like you said, it looks like the walls of Sacsayhuaman were almost melted in place. And that's not a silly thing to say. I really think like that some form of softening agent might have been used for that stone. That's not out of left field at all. I feel like from a stonemason's perspective, it looks like it was worked with heat or some melting agent, and which is totally bizarre.
Yeah, they don't look like anybody could have just cut them and put them into place. My background was drywall, so you know a drywall guy can be within a quarter inch and be golden. So to have those things fit that well just blows me away.
Absolutely, and you know what? You know, I think a really neat thing would be is just to set up and try to reproduce some of what happened. Like, okay, you have this tool, you have no written language, you have andesite to work with, go to it. You have an unlimited amount of time to try to reproduce one of these cuts or angles or raise one of these stones, and that really isn't done. It's rather, it's unfortunately tied to, like, this kooky business, you know, like, aliens built it all, whatever. And I'm not, believe me, I think there's extraterrestrial life out there. I'm not saying that, but there isn't the evidence for the actual, you know, like, yes, it's unknown who created these things. I think that's a reasonable hypothesis because it's not the Aymara people at Pumapunku, and it's not the Inca, it's not anybody else. It's somebody who possesses an advanced technology. like a pre-Ice Age advanced civilization who created the ancient maps and who created structures that can't be identified or can't be replicated by the means of the purported builders of them. So, you know, it's this unfortunate confluence of events that's caused these things just to get looked at, like to ask, like you're asking reasonable questions. And I'll tell you, as a Mason and a person who's dealt with engineers, they're more than reasonable. In fact, the official explanation for a lot of these sites is almost childish. It's just pathetic and infantile. It's like, really? That's what you're going to feed me? It's like, man, and using consensus just to beat back, you know, the heathens who don't believe that, you know, these sites were built in a particular way.
Well, and I remember reading, and I can't remember the site. I believe it was one of the Peru sites that the archaeologists were examining the things and trying to put together. It was a destroyed site, trying to figure out what it looked like originally. And instead of trying to put the blocks together as they were, they started breaking things up, cutting things, changing it to where it would fit more their perception of what it should look like instead of using the actual blocks and trying to reconstruct it.
Yeah, one, if your audience is interested in YouTube or Facebook, whatever, Brian Forrester is a brilliant researcher that investigates all these sites. Actually, I'm going, my buddy Hugh Newman is a co-author of our book. He was on the show with us, and he's been on Ancient Aliens, although he talks about megalithic structures. So Hugh Newman is a co-author with us, but we're going to Peru for a tour, a megalithomania tour with Brian in next November. And if anybody wants to go through megalithomania, if not, read Brian's stuff. It's brilliant. He makes that case, too. He just goes around all these sites, you know. I would say, you know, to anybody with an interest in these things, it's basically the dates keep getting pushed back. They just, in Sulawesi and Indonesia, they found these tools that are like 100,000 years old that vastly predate by 60,000 years the human habitation that was supposed to have taken place there. So now they're going back, an archaeological team is going back, and they're going to try to identify who these beings are, basically, to find their physical remains. I say beings, I should, you know, preface it by saying that the hobbits of Indonesia are the cousins on the next island over north of Sulawesi. And, you know, it just opens this wild question about what's going on in the past. And, you know, I would say, you know, professionals aren't the enemy. There's no enemies here. It's more like, you know, they have to be very, very measured and conservative, understandably. But there are a lot of open-minded professionals. You just got to present, you know, tangible proof for occasion making. But there are things happening all around the world in anthropology and archaeology that are really astounding that, like, would never have been thought, you know, 20, 30 years ago. So I would just have patience and understand that things are so vastly, have been proven to be so vastly different, like the age of civilization being doubled a couple of years ago with the finding of Göbekli Tepe and the hobbits and all these other things, that, you know, just bide your time and understand that, you know, there are things in the works now to reveal mysteries that were probably thought absolutely improbable at one point.
Oh, I totally believe that. And you look at some of the advances we've made with satellite imagery, finding things on the Earth now. Who knows what other things are going to show up, especially the older ones, and hopefully we'll find that those are even more advanced looking than what we've already found.
That's an excellent point. I think a lot has been covered by cataclysm. Underneath the oceans, definitely, that's where a lot of the sites of greatest antiquity are. And underneath, actually, newer sites, like you get a Palenque in Mexico or some of these ancient sites, underneath them, at the lowest level, I think at one point, the more archaeology proceeds, it's going to find older sites and more sophisticated sites. And temples all around the world get built on top of, you know, that's kind of a modern thing. And I mean, that's a natural thing for civilizations to do. And I definitely agree that satellite imagery will be our friend more and more the more sites that are found. It's really things like, you know, they found geometric forms thousands of years old, earthen forms in the Amazon Basin recently that they never thought anybody of a sophisticated, organized culture could live there. And, you know, it may not be a crashed, you know, UFO that the people might be looking for, but there are these steps taken forward that are moving forward that are revealing a much greater sophistication and antiquity for civilizations.
Right. Well, very good, Jim. We have used more time than I anticipated because this has been fascinating. I thank you so much. Hopefully in the future you'd like to do this again?
Yeah, my pleasure. Right now my brother and I did a show, a two-hour special on the Lost Colony of Roanoke, and hopefully we'll be filming this summer relating to some ancient mystery. And if you're interested in the subject, not to blow our horn, but Hugh and I put together a book that's of many years called Giants on Record.
Yes.
That catalogs so many of these finds. And I would think if you have an interest, you'd find it fascinating. And, you know, we've dug into many, many of these cases, but there are some that are still unsolved. And there are some from Utah. There are some from, you know, all out in the western states. I know your show is out there. And just fascinating accounts. I think of one now, 8'6" from Utah. I can't remember the town, but you know there are these strange reports. There's one from Utah that has medallions that were buried with this enormous skeleton that with unrecognizable hieroglyphs on them. There's all these strange twists and turns in this story of strange language and hieroglyphs and curious artifacts and giant artifacts. So. I'm getting long-winded, but anyways, I would be happy to come back on, and I appreciate the time.
Yeah, absolutely. We'd love to have you back on, and I'll get with you on a time that works for you. And I know you've got a pretty busy schedule with your business and all the research and the things that you're shooting for TV and that. So we really appreciate having you on and look forward to talking to you again. And I hope the listeners get out there and get Giants on Record and check out your shows and get more familiar with the subject.
Excellent. Thanks for having me on, Todd.
Very good. Thanks a lot, Jim. Talk to you soon. My Side of the Universe, KOAL 103.9 FM and 750 AM.
There are few things that are as smooth as a drive to the basket for 2 points.
Bailey breaks Lucondo's ankle, drives for two, foul and one.
Experience that same feeling off the court in your automobile with a trip to J&D Automotive in Castle Dell. J&D Auto is number one in parts and service. So if your car is running rough and you need a diagnosis, or if you're in need of one specific part to finish the job yourself, head to J&D Automotive in Castle Dell.
Well, this concludes my favorite hour of the week. We just finished up talking with Jim Vieira, star of Search for Lost Giants and Roanoke, the Lost Colony, talking with him about giants around the world and in the West and megalithic structures. So it's been a great time. Really enjoyed talking with Jim. Look forward to visiting with him again. Hope you all enjoyed it as much as I did. Please, if you have had a paranormal experience, we'd love to hear from you. We really want to get a local flavor on this show. So get with us at mysideradio@gmail.com or go to Twitter or Instagram to mysideradio and let us know what your experiences have been. If you've seen a UFO, let's talk about it. If you've been on one, I really want to talk to you. If you've had an interaction with Bigfoot, whether you just saw Bigfoot or actually had some kind of interaction, I would like to talk to you. And I think the people in the community would like to hear about it as well. We can do it anonymously, as you've heard us do it before, or we can talk about who you are and go into more detail that way. So please get in touch with us. We want this to be a local flavor and let us know what's been happening in the area. So if you have anything paranormal, please get with us at mysideradio@gmail.com or go to Twitter or Instagram at mysideradio. So thank you so much for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week. This is Todd Wilcox, host of My Side of the Universe on KOAL 103.9 FM and 750 AM. See you next week.